Chapter 33. You're more the asking type. Andrew's brain, a thing of reckless fixation, couldn't let that go. That, and the pliant softness of Neil's mouth against his, a welcome Andrew would know anywhere. Andrew had forged himself into a weapon so long ago, he thought he'd lost any potential for softness. His hands were for drawing blood, his mind honed to ruthlessness. If he could have made himself a skin of blades, he would have. He'd done the next best thing instead. Monster. A man out of control, and uncontrollable. A man to be feared. And yet, he'd been gentling himself for months now. To be careful with the raven runaway who'd proven himself a weapon several times over. The one who had looked Andrew in the eye, knowing exactly what they both were, and said, "You can touch me." Trust was Neil's hand in his. His brow furrowed in curiosity, without a trace of fear. That was what care had earned Andrew this time. In the past, it had always been pain. He couldn't quite reconcile that, probably because he could see this would end up that way, too. Andrew didn't hate him because of that. There was no point protesting the inevitable when he'd walked himself right into this. He hated Neil because he said, "There must be easier things to feel," and didn't mean anger and hatred, but didn't mean nicer when he said easier either, because he prodded and guessed and knew too much, because they were too similar, because Andrew was the one who'd given Neil all of the keys he needed and was still angry that Neil wanted to find the locks they fit. He wasn't Andrew's only problem, though. Unbelievably, Aaron was proving himself to be a bigger one, with his abandonment issues and his resentment over the girl he'd pushed away himself. He'd sat in silence through the first session he sat in on with B and Andrew, refusing to answer any questions aimed at him or ask any of his own. Andrew had pretended that he wasn't there. B didn't quite do the same. She was unabashedly interested in whatever was behind Aaron's presence, but she made a good attempt at continuing the session as normal. Andrew had thought that Aaron wouldn't come a second time. He was wrong. The second session, Aaron changed his tactic. He sat in the same place, with his back against the rear wall of the office so that he could stare at Andrew's back in his place in front of B's desk. B was gently prompting Andrew in her usual style, bringing up topics that all boiled down to need and purpose and want, when Aaron interrupted her mid-sentence. "Tell me again," he said, "why you did it." He could have meant any number of things. He didn't. "Because I promised that I would. You didn't believe me. Neither did she. That made it easy. You waited a long time, if that's the truth." He sounded calm, but it was a front. They had the same temper. Andrew kept his eyes steady on the wall over B's shoulder. "Planning takes time," he replied, with a little hitch of his shoulders. He'd never meant to be caught. Andrew was smart, but finesse was learned, not innate. He had worked harder than Aaron would ever know to ensure that Andrew was still there in the aftermath. Not because he didn't want to be locked up. He didn't care. But his promise to Aaron hadn't ended with Tilda in the morgue. Aaron was the one who'd forgotten that, so caught up in pretending it was shackles instead. Aaron said, "Yeah, I bet revenge does." "Revenge is a waste of time and energy," Andrew recited. "And that's not what I promised you. Remember?" "You said you would protect me, not that you would murder her," Aaron said, a snarl breaking free. B's face didn't change, but Andrew had watched her flick off her ever-present recorder a few minutes earlier. It wasn't something that Andrew had told her, but he didn't care if she knew. The only way she was ever going to stop was if she was dead. Tilda Minyard was like every abuser Andrew had ever met, sometimes sweet, sometimes loving, and often cruel. Aaron had just been caught in that cycle, over and over, no idea that there was anything else but soft words intermingled with bruises. Cass had taught Andrew something, even if it was just the power of comparison. Aaron was silent for a long moment. Then he said, "Neil said he wouldn't regret what he did to Drake for the same reason you didn't with Mom. He said I was blind to that because I was angry." "He was right," Andrew said. There was nothing said at all for several minutes. B waited to see if they would go on, and then finally said, "Aaron?" I'm still not talking to you, Aaron said. She nodded. Will you listen, though? Andrew didn't bother to turn to see if Aaron nodded in reply, but he must have, because B went on. I can understand why you're angry. Why you both are. Andrew tilted his head at her. She smiled. I suppose the question is, where to from here? Andrew raised a hand, indicating the air around him. Same old, same old. B knew what it meant. Aaron did, too. I'm staying. He didn't mean continuing with the shared sessions. That would have been aimed at B, and Aaron didn't want to talk to her. It was for Andrew, the same thing he'd said when Andrew had offered to renew their deal at the end of high school. Aaron's presence and need for protection felt less like a shackle now than it did then, though not by much. That was probably because Andrew was less apathetic about being alive these days. B smiled again, enough to show her teeth. I'll see you both next week. She stood, but not before Aaron was out the door and gone. Andrew looked to the door and then back to her, extracting a box from his pocket that he set on her desk. Time to break out the ruler, he said, indicating B's collection of figurines with a flick of his chin. His first ever gift had been a pointed prod in a tender spot, because he'd known that B would have to arrange the ones that she did have. She'd taken it with grace, and only a hint of sly amusement under her thanks. Andrew hadn't trusted her at all then, but it had been a start. These days, it was different, and they both knew it. Her voice was warm when she said, "Thank you, Andrew." In Redden's parking lot, Aaron was waiting by the car, having adopted an insolent slump against the driver's side door. Apparently, he still had something else to say. He waited until Andrew was a yard away before opening his mouth. I really couldn't figure it out, he said, faux casual. Whether Wesninski really wanted to suck your dick or Kevin's. I think I know now, though. Do you? Homophobic asshole was a language Andrew wasn't interested in listening to. He vaguely contemplated throwing Aaron over the hood of the car and leaving him there. Yeah, it's yours, right? He said. Except I'm not sure that's all it is. You wanted me to believe that you keep your promises, and now I do. I guess the question is, did you make him one, or are you two glued together for another reason? Glued together. He's always wherever you are, Aaron said, quietly victorious, like that was some kind of feat of scrutiny, compared with Andrew noticing his infatuation with the cheerleader. What, did you think you're the only one who can make an observation? Are you just getting soft? Tell me it's not because you're hot for him. Andrew raised an eyebrow at him. Someone might think you are, considering how much you go on about him. Don't let him get too close, brother, Aaron said. You were willing to make sure that I kept up my end of the deal. Don't think I won't do the same. It wasn't a coincidence that Andrew passed Matt on the way down the hall on Thursday evening. Renee had mentioned that he and Dan were going to dinner together tonight during practice. Andrew went to the door of the suite he shared with Neil and tapped once. After a second, Neil swung it open with a confused expression. It cleared when he saw Andrew. Hi, he said. Without asking, he stepped back and allowed Andrew in past him before closing the door again. He locked it, too. A few months ago, he certainly wouldn't have done that with Andrew in the room. Andrew gave himself a second to look around the suite. He hadn't been inside it before, but it was the same as the others besides the details. Neil's desk was covered in syllabi from freshman courses, and the chair was pushed back, like he'd been distracted in the middle of studying. What's up? Neil asked, expectantly. When Andrew looked to him, his gaze was piercing. He'd said, I'll wait on a yes. And he had, only pushing the same way he had every day since they'd met, not encroaching on the boundary lines Andrew had quietly drawn between them. Annoyingly, he had stayed true to his word. Any time now, that would stop surprising Andrew. Ask me, Andrew said. Neil looked very serious, no hint of a smile or smug satisfaction. He said, promise me something first. Andrew waited him out. He wouldn't agree until he heard what Neil wanted. Don't ever put your hands on me if you're drunk or high. That was interesting. Not if you are. I already know you won't do that, he replied, with the certainty that would no doubt one day get him killed. The same way you should know that I would never do the same to you. They were both walking minefields. Andrew should have said no to everything and left and found a way to forget everything since Monday night. Since before that, probably. He said instead, fine. Ask me. Yes or no? Neil asked. He leaned back against the wall, putting his body on an almost artistic slant. He stretched his arms out enough to lay his fingers flat against the wall, low at his sides, head falling back to expose the curve of his throat. His face was still serious, but there was a touch of a smirk at the corner of his mouth. Don't forget to be specific with me. I'm stupid, remember? Andrew said, yes. Andrew stepped into the gap made by his wide stance, an inch of air separating their bodies. He watched Neil's face for a reaction to being here, when Andrew had seen him freeze like this before, and saw nothing. Then he stepped closer again, closing the distance to a hair's breadth. Don't move. Neil was too easy to kiss. He tilted his face to meet Andrew dead on, with just a light touch at his jaw. His quick but steady heartbeat pounded against Andrew's palm. Andrew's other hand swept down the center of his chest and back up, all over the skin-warm cotton of his shirt, feeling the subtle shift of muscle underneath. When Andrew eventually pulled back, mouth hot, Neil's eyes were hooded and his cheeks slightly flushed. Andrew traced the shape of him through his jeans, feeling him push eagerly into the touch. Have you done this before? His lashes fluttered, but his gaze didn't waver from Andrew's. No. He didn't look afraid. He looked expectant, perhaps feverish, but not desperate. There was no trace of his smart tongue, or the smirk he liked to wear. His mouth was too busy being softly open, an invitation. Andrew drew a finger along the line of his waistband, feeling his abs draw tight in reaction, before relaxing again. Yes, Andrew asked. Or no? Yes, Andrew, he replied, solemn besides the spark of heat in his eyes. He hissed when Andrew reached past his fly and grasped him firmly. He was incredibly reactive. Each stroke pulled free a shaky breath or tiny gasp, his eyes closing with a sensation and then opening so he could look back to Andrew's face. Andrew wanted to say, it's just a hand job. Not because that was what he thought. Nothing was just anything, with sex and with the both of them. But because of the intensity of him, the noises he made, and the shudders, and the way he tilted his head for a series of kisses, made it harder than Andrew would have liked to remember that this was nothing but satisfaction for him. He reminded himself, pretty face, hot body, and the ability to follow your rules. You don't need anything else for this. He kissed Neil harder until he couldn't think of anything except his breathless gasping every time Andrew broke away, and the silky hot weight of his cock in Andrew's hand. All those things, and the unwavering set of hands well away from Andrew's body, an unchanging promise that he wouldn't touch without permission. He came into Andrew's hand with a soft grunt, biting Andrew's lip hard enough to sting. He soothed it with his tongue before breaking away, rocking his cheek against Andrew's so he could breathe through the last of the shudders racking his body. Andrew extracted his hand after a moment, leaning back. He looked at Neil's swollen-lipped, pink face from 4 inches away and felt anger bite in his gut. That did nothing to force down his arousal. Go away, he said, stepping back. Neil blinked at him lazily, but didn't ask him to clarify. He straightened and took his hands off the wall, but slipped sideways so he didn't encroach on Andrew's space. Andrew didn't turn to watch him go, listening to the pad of his feet and the soft click of a door down the hall. For all a part of him said, just don't fucking bother, his tripwire brain was still replaying Neil's tiny grunt as he'd come. Gritting his teeth, he reached into his own pants and jerked himself off with a tight fist, quick motions that had him coming while biting down on his own bottom lip. At least after that, he was only angry. Neil gave him plenty of time, eventually reappearing in different clothes and sidling straight to the fridge. Andrew had already raided it and was leaning against the kitchen counter drinking one of Boyd's beers. Neil pulled out a soda and popped it open before turning to Andrew. You good? He asked, voice low. Andrew stared back at him, every touch of fury restrained to nothingness. Neil frowned, brow furrowing. You didn't change your mind, he said. Not quite a statement, but not all the way to a question. Like he really thought he'd have any doubt if Andrew changed his answer to a no. Andrew didn't say anything, which seemed to deepen the furrow in his forehead. Andrew? No, Andrew said. The word made Neil flinch, the pause following it draining a bit of blood from his face. It was probably bad that Andrew felt satisfied by that. I didn't change my mind. Neil's gaze, which had been sinking steadily in the direction of the ground, shot up to Andrew's. After a moment, he said, Okay. There was a hard knock at the door that made them both jump. Neil flicked the spilled soda from his fingers and sent Andrew a look before he went to get it. It was, of course, Kevin. He sounded irate. Are you coming to the court? By the surprised look on Neil's face as his eyes flickered to the wall clock above Andrew's head, he'd lost track of time. Yeah, of course. Do you know where the hell Andrew is? Kevin asked. Neil swung the door open so that Kevin could see Andrew standing in the kitchen. Kevin frowned at the sight of him, but there was no spark of understanding in his face. That was unsurprising. Hurry up, he told them both, and turned on his heel. Neil watched him go. What a dick, he said, half annoyed and half amused. You coming? You walking? Andrew replied, voice flat. He dropped his half-empty can on the counter and walked straight out the door after Kevin. Neil scuffled into his shoes and followed at a trot, closing the door behind him. Andrew listened to the jingle of keys as he joined Kevin in front of their door and started towards the elevator. Neil pushed through a fire door with a thud and started down the stairs. He beat them to the ground floor and led the way across the parking lot, more energetic than anyone had a right to be going for a third practice for the day. Kevin was a few meters behind him, and Andrew trailed at the back with a clear view of both. They were within meters of the car when Neil paused mid-step, his head snapping up. He said, Do you smell that? The wind shifted, blowing the scent he'd caught back to Andrew's nose. It was the distinctive reek of gasoline, harsh in the back of his throat. Kevin stopped in his tracks. The can of soda crashed onto the asphalt, spilling everywhere with an audible hiss. Neil pivoted on his heel, took three steps, and crashed straight into Kevin in a tackle that would have made his old defensive coach proud. The two of them hit the ground just as the car exploded. Chapter 34. He'd said to Andrew, I'm not a bomb that's going to explode in your face. Neil had been wrong. It happened so fast. 1 second, normality. Or as close to it as possible, with Neil still feeling the ghosts of Andrew's hands on his skin, satisfaction mixed up with the roaming adrenaline of touch. The next second, hell. Neil, deaf and blind, clutched at Kevin hard enough to bruise. He thought for a moment that he might be burning, the reek of smoke and hot metal thick in his nose. Every exposed inch of his skin felt seared. Then hands pried them apart. Dazed, Neil blinked his vision back and found himself looking straight into Andrew's face. His mouth was moving, but Neil couldn't make out the words over the ringing in his ears. He was bleeding, too, from a cut in his cheek towards his ear. Neil looked back over his shoulder towards the car, now a ruin of flame and billowing smoke against the night sky. Time, which had been as slow as molasses, sped up. There was no way that this was an accident, and no way that the timing was coincidental. This was Neil Wisniewski's life, after all. He fumbled to his feet, half-dragging Kevin up with him. Go, Neil said, his voice sounding like he was deep underwater, his hands set on Kevin's back and pushing him towards the relative safety of the tower. It was only when they made it halfway there that Neil realized at least some of the ringing in his ears was car alarms going off. A brutal cacophony like that was bound to attract the attention of the athletes who lived in the tower. That the Foxes were the first to crash out of the main doors was the least surprising thing to happen all day. Matt, in the lead, nearly collided with Kevin, and then, recognizing him, threw an arm around him in support. Renee and Dan were right behind Matt, wearing sleeping clothes and matching wide-eyed expressions. "What the fuck happened?" Dan asked, her voice still thin to Neil's ears. She already had her phone held to her ear. WiMac rather than the cops, Neil would have bet. Are you all right? Neil hurt dully all over from his collision with the ground, his hands and arms the worst. When he looked down, he saw he'd taken most of the skin off of his forearms and palms, bloody and dotted with gravel. Renee hissed a little at the sight when she followed his gaze. Kevin was the same, and his chin was bloodied from where Neil's leap had dropped him onto the ground. They were, however, alive. Neil felt a pulse of nauseating relief rip through him at the thought. Things happened quickly after that. Someone had already called the emergency services, which showed up in a barrage of sirens and lights. They confined the rest of the inhabitants of the tower to the building, including most of the foxes. Dan was the exception. She wouldn't leave the three of them, and put up a hell of a fight when the cops tried to make her. Neil and Kevin were made to sit at the back of an ambulance to have their grazes cleaned. When the EMT asked Andrew to sit, she was ignored. Neil took the wad of gauze from her hand and shoved it into Andrew's. He stared at it for a moment, before pressing it to the cut on his cheek that was still trickling a little blood. Wemeck's car screeched into the lot, and he appeared a moment later with an expression of ruthless focus on his face. It transitioned subtly to relief at the sight of them, like he really had no idea what state they were in. Neil thought guiltily of the last time he'd gotten a call like that. It was Columbia, after Drake. He stopped in front of them, looking from face to face. "Well, I'm glad to see you're still all in one piece." "None of these assholes would talk to the cops," Dan said, leveling her glare at them. She hadn't appreciated having to cover their asses by answering the questions she could, while Kevin copied Neil and Andrew's stony silence. That was more than clear. Wemeck looked unsurprised. Rather than wasting his breath on them, he turned away and waved down a cop, grilling him with his questions instead. Neil's arms still stung from being cleaned with sharp-smelling disinfectant, and his entire body was sore and tight. He suspected that Kevin, who he'd landed mostly on top of, felt worse. Neil looked down at his phone, looked up, and then looked back down. After a second, he laughed. The sound made everyone look to him, bar Wemeck, who was deep in conversation still. "I'd love to hear what you find funny," Dan said, her voice foreboding. Neil held up the phone, which showed the current time. 12:23 a.m. on Friday, January 19th. "Happy birthday to me," he quipped. She and Kevin stared at him blankly for a long moment. "What, you thought this was a coincidence?" Wemeck had requested extra security for the tower and stadium since Neil's interview, which seemed to have deterred the usual Raven fan responses of spray-painted death threats and broken windows. Explosions were perhaps not too extreme for them, but this was professional work, down to the timing. They were hurt, but not badly. This was meant to frighten Kevin and Neil both. Rico had been bound to respond to Neil's brazen words somehow. This wasn't that far, for him. After all, they were still alive. It remained to be seen whether this was just the beginning. Neil felt like he was running through the same cycle over and over, near miss after near miss, each coming closer than the last. If the next one was only an inch closer than this, he would survive it. But it was getting a little too near for comfort. Not just for him, either. "You could sprain your ankle and I'd be wondering if it was really an accident at this point," Dan replied. "Happy birthday. Get inside if the EMT is done with you. We'll talk about this later." The EMT in question waved them off, looking happy to be rid of them. Kevin led the way inside, his gait stiff. He was going to be hellishly sore in their game tomorrow. Neil hoped that Dan was already considering reprising her role as a striker sub, because he doubted that he would feel much better. The rest of the team were gathered in the lobby waiting, a clump of anxious faces that all turned when the doors opened. Neil had 30 seconds to feel warm inside about them waiting together as a team. Then Aaron moved from his spot on the outskirts of the group and crashed straight into him, fists first. Neil, surprised, couldn't catch himself in time to stop going over backwards. Aaron landed on top of him on his knees, his hands tangled in Neil's shirt, knocking every particle of oxygen out of his lungs. "Do you even fucking care what you being here is costing us?" he asked, his voice pitched low, but no less vicious for it. He didn't give Neil a chance to answer anyway, driving a fist into his mouth instead. The next second, Aaron was gone, bodily wrenched off of Neil. Coughing, Neil tried to push himself upright. Just before he gave up, hands grabbed his arms and helped him to get there. Renee, her jaw tight and concern written all over her face. Andrew had thrown Aaron halfway across the room and then followed. He had him pressed up against the wall, hand to his neck. Behind them, Nikki looked caught between stepping in and knowing that it was pointless. "Andrew," Neil said, his voice rasping as he dragged air back in. He'd bitten his cheek hard enough that his mouth was half full of blood. There was no way, logically, that Aaron could best Andrew in a fight. That shouldn't have prevented him trying, though. That he stood there with Andrew's hand tight around his throat and didn't even struggle meant something. Perhaps not to Andrew, though, who still looked like he meant to choke the life out of his own brother. "Andrew!" Neil attempted again. That didn't even earn him a glance. "I warned you," Aaron said to Andrew, his voice tight but clearly audible. He must have been getting some oxygen into his lungs, then. "I warned you that letting him stay was going to destroy everything." "I didn't realize you had such strong feelings about the car," Andrew said, his tone silken. Neil considered spitting, remembered the carpet, and then swallowed the taste of copper in his mouth instead. "He doesn't care about the car. He's pissed about your face." Andrew looked to Neil, and then back to Aaron. He was silent, but his gaze was a prompt that included both of them. "He thinks I'm going to get you killed," Neil continued. "You, specifically." "I don't need to be protected," Andrew replied, this statement addressed to no one in particular. "Don't you?" It didn't look as though Aaron had been expecting any agreement from Neil. Both twins turned to look at him at the same time. "Or is it just his protection, in particular, that you don't want?" "I'm sure he could do better than yours," Aaron snarled, jerking in Andrew's grip like he wanted to hit Neil again. "Don't act like you're doing us all a favor by trying to play mediator here. This is about you. You are going to get him killed. You think that any of us buys that this was a coincidence after you ripped into the Ravens on live television last Friday?" "No, I know that even you aren't that oblivious," Neil said. Aaron's eyes were burning, locked onto Neil and too angry to be worried about his dangerous brother, even when he was right there and a very real threat. Maybe at some point he'd learned not to be afraid of Andrew. "Do you even fucking care? Or are you incapable of giving a shit about the collateral damage your little fight with Moriyama is causing?" Before Neil could answer, Andrew let go of Aaron and stepped back. He said in German, "I seem to recall that you don't care very much about whether or not I'm alive. What a change of heart." "I still fucking hate you," Aaron snapped, hand to his own neck. His skin was red, but Neil doubted it would bruise. Andrew had made a promise to his brother, too. "But I don't want you dead. I never did." "How sweet," Andrew replied. Aaron was losing his attention, and by the look on his face, he knew it. To him, Andrew and disinterest went hand in hand. He said, "Stay here and I'll keep you alive. You made that deal, remember? Don't you think that keeping it requires you being alive too?" Andrew, whose gaze had started to drift, looked back at him as if drawn into it. "If you think you're going to win this way, you're wrong." Because there was still Caitlin, hovering in the wings and ready to step back in if Andrew relented enough to give her a chance. "This isn't about winning," Aaron replied. "This is about you, staying. Because I already told you that I would. So maybe you're the one who hasn't prepared to keep up your end of the bargain." The two of them stared at each other for a long moment, dark-eyed. Neil wasn't sure if he'd ever seen them share a look of understanding until now. He wasn't even sure he'd ever seen them look at one another at all. His brain could only immediately provide images of them very pointedly looking away. Wymack, who had at some point entered the lobby, interrupted with, "What the fuck is going on here?" He sounded his usual version of weary and furious. Neil touched a hand to his mouth, checking for blood, and it came back clean. It might swell, though. Andrew, his expression returned to passivity, said, "Just chatting. Did you want something, coach?" "Yeah, you," he pointed at Neil. need to give me one good reason why we aren't canceling the game tomorrow. Because the board is going to be pressing for it. Slashed tires and graffiti are one thing, but car bombs are another entirely. We can't put a stadium full of fans at risk like that. You can't cancel it, Kevin said. It's a championship game. If we forfeit, it's too much of a risk that we won't get enough points to progress to the next round. Yeah, and if someone gets killed at one of our home games, I can't promise that the ERC won't strike us straight out of Class 1 anyway, Wymack replied. One good reason, Wisniewski. One. Neil's brain was racing. Do they know it was a bomb? I mean, it could have been an accident. The entire car was doused with gas. If you'd spoken to the cops, you would have known that. But trust me, there's no way that anyone thinks this is an accident. The question in their minds is who was the one who planted it. The Foxes knew exactly who'd done it, but any proof was most likely Cinders. Neil resisted the urge to grind his teeth. The press have been hounding us since the UT game, so give them something to talk about, Renee suggested suddenly. Say we suspect that it's Ravens fans messing with us again. They have enough in the past. Put it back on them in public. It's not as though Neil didn't already suggest to the entire world that the Ravens are problematic. We can play on that to ensure they back off. Everyone but Andrew and Neil looked at her in surprise. She was wearing her sweetheart face still, but those words were from someone a hell of a lot harder than that. The others weren't quite as familiar with that woman as Neil had come to be. We get our game and annoy those assholes into the bargain, Allison said after a moment. I like it. You would, Matt said. Coach? With the attention of his entire team on him, Wymack crossed his arms and looked back at them. I'll put out a statement in the morning. No doubt there'll be reporters begging to hear about it anyway. There's going to be even more security on campus from tonight onwards, though, and if one of them gets even a sniff of something going on, the game will be canceled. The season isn't more important than the safety of you lot and the other students. They could only nod their agreement to that, even those of them who didn't agree. Wymack checked his watch and then sighed. Get your asses to bed. Andrew, I'll take you to pick up a rental car when I have time. Andrew, already halfway across the lobby, waved over his shoulder in acknowledgement, but didn't look back. His departure galvanized the rest of the team into following, albeit at a distance. Kevin and Neil were the only ones who hung back, even when the others threw them glances as they left. Wymack stood there watching the two of them. When Neil glanced at him, he merely waved a hand to go on. Kevin cast his father a careful look. He had listened to Jean's warning about the main branch, too. He muttered in French, You don't think... Neil shook his head. You don't think Rico is capable of this on his own? A year or so ago, the answer would have been no. Now, though, Kevin had seen far too much of the true extent of Rico's psychopathic tendencies to disagree. After another glance to Wymack, he turned and followed the others. That just left Neil and Wymack. Wymack said, We're going to need to talk about this a little bit more at some point. I figured, Neil replied. You let me know, and I'll be there. Chapter 35 Neil's phone woke him up the next morning before his alarm got the chance. When he managed to find it under his pillow, he blinked blearily at it until the screen resolved itself into a text alert from Wymack. Apparently he, Kevin, and Andrew would be excused from classes today in the lead-up to the game tonight. As Neil stretched under the blanket, he found himself grateful. He was stiff and sore after last night, and couldn't help thinking his arm guards and gloves were going to be hellishly uncomfortable over the mass of grazes on his arms. Matt's alarm went off then, a blare of noise that made Neil jerk and then groan. Matt rustled around for a second to flick his alarm off, and then rolled off of the bed with a thud. There was no immediate sound of him getting up afterwards. Wondering if he'd injured himself, the last thing the Foxes needed at this point, Neil leaned over the edge of his bunk. Matt was lying on his back, entangled in his blankets. When he saw Neil looking down at him, he grinned. Happy birthday. Neil stared back at him for a long moment. Thanks? Matt's smile turned to a frown. Is this gonna be like the Christmas thing again? The Christmas thing? Like, you've never celebrated it before, and you're going to spend the whole day looking confused by it? Neil didn't think that was how he'd acted over Christmas, but Matt did almost have a point. Neil had never really celebrated his birthday before. A year ago, he'd turned 18 with the knowledge that legal adulthood wasn't going to earn him any freedoms. The year before that, he and Jean had been in the middle of plotting to remove someone from the nest permanently. He couldn't remember a time where he'd enjoyed his birthday. Even before his recapture, his mother hadn't cared at all, except that she'd managed to keep him alive for another year. Neil said, "Probably." "Hey, at least this year we get to show you a good time," Matt said, recovering his cheer as he finally picked himself off the floor. "How are you feeling, by the way?" "I'll be fine for tonight," Neil said. Matt opened his mouth, but Neil interrupted him with, "Coach said that Andrew, Kevin, and I can skip class today." Whatever Matt had been planning was derailed. "Unfair!" "Have fun," Neil said, a little bit smug. "I'm going back to sleep." He rolled over and lay listening to Matt grumble while he got ready until the door closed behind him. Unfortunately, now that he was awake, he couldn't stop replaying last night. The moment of instinctual awareness of something being off in the parking lot, the pressure and noise of the explosion itself, and Andrew's face above his against a background of smoke and night sky. After tossing and turning for an hour, he gave up on sleep and got up to go check on Kevin. With classes underway, the tower was just about empty. Neil didn't have to worry about attracting attention as he went down the hall to the cousin's room and knocked lightly at the door. After a minute, it opened. Andrew, his cheeks swollen out of shape around the cut from last night, stared at him blankly for a long moment. "Is Kevin in there?" Neil asked eventually. He hadn't thought to feel awkward about last night until that moment, but he suddenly did. "At Abby's," Andrew said, and then turned away. He left the door open behind him, so Neil followed him in. By the time he'd closed and relocked it, Andrew had dropped into one of the beanbag chairs in front of the television. There was some kind of soap playing on mute that Andrew stared at, though he didn't seem to be tracking what was happening on screen. Neil eyed the other beanbag chair, and then decided that in his current state he might be stuck in it if he sat there. Instead, he sank down to sit cross-legged on the floor, a few feet away from Andrew, feeling the stretch in his thighs and hips. He stared uncomprehendingly at the screen for a long moment, in silence, before he pulled out his phone and sent Kevin a text. "Are you okay?" It took a few more minutes of watching two cookie-cutter blondes arguing soundlessly on screen for the reply. "I can play." "Not really an answer," Neil sent back. That he didn't get a reply to that wasn't very surprising. Neil finally looked up to Andrew, who didn't meet his gaze. "I'm surprised you let him out of your sight." "Wymack came for him," Andrew replied. The words sounded heavier than normal. Andrew's voice wasn't expressive now that he was sober, but right now it was particularly dull. That distracted Neil from his preoccupation with Kevin. "Are you all right?" Andrew didn't answer or move at all. After a second, Neil knelt up, ignoring the pain of leaning on his abraded palms, and crawled around so he could sit between Andrew and the television. For a long moment, Andrew stared right through him. Then, finally, his gaze focused on Neil's face, so their eyes met. There was no trace of the anger there from last night, or whatever it had been that Neil had caught a blinded glimpse of when Andrew had bent over him in the aftermath of the explosion. He looked as blank as his voice. Neil knew perfectly well that that didn't mean anything. "Are you angry with me?" It wasn't as though he didn't have reason to be. Neil had promised to try and fix things with Aaron, but he couldn't seem to stop pitting brother against brother in ways he'd never anticipated. That had culminated with Andrew's hands around Aaron's throat, in direct violation of Andrew's promise of protecting him. He blinked at Neil lazily. "Why would I be?" "Should I recite the entire list?" Neil replied. "It's not that long, I guess. Your car, Kevin, Aaron." Because Kevin had been in the line of fire last night, too. All because of Neil. He was fucking up, and he wasn't sure how to stop. He wasn't sure, either, how to turn Andrew's expression from what it was now back to the quiet intensity with which he'd watched Neil fall apart under his hands. So he did the same as he always did. He looked for a soft spot, and then exploited it. "Want a free hit?" he said, with a smirk. He knew that Andrew wouldn't take him up on it. He also suspected Andrew might want to. Andrew's hand shot out and curled into the front of Neil's shirt, jerking him closer. "You don't need to offer. If I want one, I'll take it." "Guess you are the man who claims he doesn't want anything," Neil said. Something sparked in Andrew's eyes. Not quite anger, but not far off of it. "I wouldn't push right now if I were you." "You aren't me, though." "No, I'm not a reckless wretch determined to walk a tightrope unraveling from both ends." "Not what your brother implied," Neil said. Andrew's grip got tighter, pulling Neil's collar in around his throat. Another warning against taking the conversation anywhere near Aaron. Neil wouldn't get another. "He doesn't know anything." Neil hummed. "I don't know. I think he's figured out that you and I are the same kind of man." "You don't have a death wish, either," Andrew said, though his gaze implied he was wondering, based on that last comment. "You are determined to play the same games as your enemies, but I don't know that you've prepared to go far enough to win. Maybe that's close enough to a death wish to be the same thing." "If you really think that, then you don't have any idea what I'm capable of," Neil said. Someone knocked at the door. Neil started at the sound, but Andrew didn't. He was the one who went to answer it, standing in a movement quick enough to force Neil back. Without him that close, Neil found he could breathe again as he crouched on the floor. The interruption was probably timely. With extra distance, Neil thought that what he'd been about to say would probably only complicate things further. It didn't pay to have any more dead men between the two of them. Renee was standing on the other side of the door when Andrew opened it, her phone in hand. Her expression was deeply serious. She looked straight to Neil, and he instantly felt cold uncertainty stir in his gut. "I'm sorry to interrupt," Renee said, "but Neil, you really need to see this." Renee wasn't the only fox who'd returned to the tower. Half the team was gathered in the girls' suite. Nikki was perched on the couch with a laptop on his knees. In fact, as he looked around, Neil realized that it was only Matt, Aaron, and Kevin who were missing. "What's going on?" Neil said, more demand than a question. Nikki opened his mouth, closed it again, and then looked pleadingly at Dan. Their captain's expression was grim and furious, her dark eyes fearsome. "Someone put a video of you online," she said, unwillingly. "From Evermore." Neil's thoughts, which had been racing, ground to a halt. "What?" "It's probably easier to just show you," she said, "if that's okay." "Yeah," he replied. Dan and Nikki exchanged another look, and then Nikki turned the laptop around to face Neil and pressed play. It was small enough on the screen that he had to walk closer to see it properly. The video could have been shot anywhere. No one but ravens went into the dorms in Castle Evermore, so what was recognizable to Neil wouldn't be to anyone else. What was unmistakable was that it was Nathaniel Wesninski in front of the camera, and that he was definitely under the influence of either alcohol or drugs. He could barely stand up straight. "Oh yeah," Neil said. His voice sounded strange out loud. Too casual, maybe. "I remember this one." Not because he remembered anything about that night. He did remember being shown the footage afterwards, though. On screen, he laughed silently and threw his arms around the neck of an unidentifiable man, his head tilted up like he wanted to be kissed. If he recalled correctly, that was pretty much the theme of this particular video. Andrew said from behind him, "Turn it off." His tone didn't sound casual at all. Nikki moved very quickly to shut the laptop. Neil found himself staring at its closed lid for a long moment until he came back to himself. There were worse ones. Right now, he didn't dare think of the content of those. "Who posted it?" "Someone with the username RavenFan0102, Allison sneered from where she'd leaned against the far wall, her arms crossed. "But I doubt it's a genuine leak, considering. They don't have any other videos on their profile." Neil swallowed and then nodded. The following silence was eventually interrupted by a thump at the door, which Renee went to investigate. It was Wymack, with a blank-faced Aaron behind him. Wymack looked around the room. "I presume you've all already heard, then." No one answered him. After a moment, he sighed. "We're working to get it taken down, but the reporters knew about it before I did. Made for some awkward conversations, I can tell you." Neil winced. Wymack would have gone to make a statement about last night and been bombarded with questions about the video instead. "Is there anything else we can do? I mean, surely it's illegal or traceable or something," Dan said, arms crossed. She looked like she wanted to find someone to fight. "It's fine," Neil said, in an attempt at placating her. "I knew that they had footage like that. I knew there was a chance it would leak." "It's not fine." Allison was white-faced with fury. It took Neil a moment to figure out why she was so angry. She had a history of video and photographs of her being made public against her will, thanks to the public obsession with her. "It's not that bad, comparatively," Neil said. It was a statement meant to comfort them, but by their faces it missed the mark. "They have a limited amount of footage to use if they want to publicly humiliate me without implicating themselves. I'm underage in most of it, and Rico always liked to get involved. His face is just as distinctive as mine." He wasn't interested in going into any more detail. It was bad enough knowing they'd all seen what they had. His skin was prickling with spikes of electricity. "It doesn't matter," he reiterated, his tone far more firm than he felt. "Coach?" Wymack had been watching him carefully in silence, but he shifted when Neil said his name. "You're staying with me until this blows over. Andrew, I'll swap with you." Neil had forgotten about Kevin for a second. None of this was helpful with his goal of keeping him here with the Foxes. Andrew waved Wymack off anyway. "He's Abby's problem until the game tonight," he said, leaning back against the wall by the door. Neil looked from him to Wymack and moved as though to join the latter so that they could leave. He was perfectly happy not to spend another moment here. A hand reached out to encircle his wrist, stopping him in his tracks. Before he thought about it, he grabbed back, hard enough to bruise, his nails digging into delicate skin. Nikki squeaked, "Neil!" Neil let go just as quickly, taking a large step back. "Don't touch me," he snapped, his voice coming out sharp enough to cut. No one seemed sure of how to react. They looked at him like he was a feral dog that had just bitten someone. All of them stood in a frozen tableau for a long moment until Wymack broke the silence again. "Neil, we're leaving," he said, and turned to do just that. Neil followed him, ignoring the eyes of his teammates on his back as he left. He was still a dangerous creature to them, and not just in terms of getting caught in the fallout. He flexed his fingers at his sides as he followed and felt the zing of pain from his grazed palms, not sure whether he was grateful to have provided that timely reminder. Typically, his birthday was going the same way as all the others. Walking onto the court that evening, Neil felt frozen to the core. Wymack had gone easy on him, really, but he hadn't been able to avoid the truth. He would do what he could to help Neil at PSU, but he was a scholarship athlete who had signed that he wouldn't do anything to harm the reputation of the school. The publicity his presence had won the Foxes wasn't enough to mean that a car bomb, and now the video, didn't have him on thin ice with the school board. In the end, it wouldn't matter how desperate he was to stay here. If he couldn't stop fucking up, then he'd be out on his ass with no hope of being signed onto another college team. And that, for him, was a death sentence. Despite the events of the night before, the stadium was still full to the brim and as raucous as ever. They screamed loud enough to lift the roof in greeting, a typical home crowd in near fluorescent orange. Neil didn't want to be here. He hurt all over. He felt like his heart was crushed down in his chest. But not like he was afraid. Like he was nothing but a black hole on the inside, instead. He remembered being nothing. After all these months, it had come right back to him the second Nikki had pressed play on that video. If he had the chance, he'd throw his racket down and run until he couldn't anymore. It was only having the other Foxes at his back that kept him there at all, without a single shred of bravado from their game against UT. Even that was barely enough when the court doors were slammed and locked behind the last player onto the court. Neil's backliner mark was relentless, too. Not in terms of gameplay. Neil could run rings around him. But he wouldn't shut up with comments that Neil couldn't quite tune out, despite the fact that Neil didn't reply to a single one. That was probably because they were working. By the time the buzzer for the first half sounded, they were drawn 3-all, but Kevin may as well have been the only Fox striker on the court. Renee, who was ready to come on in Andrew's place for the second half, sidled over to him as he sipped water and kept moving to keep his body loose when every muscle felt like setting concrete. She didn't speak, just hovered nearby. For the first time in months, Neil found her presence more unsettling than relaxing, but he didn't ask her to leave. He knew perfectly well that he would be no better alone. He had a new mark for the second half, whose approach at getting to Neil was completely different. She was physically aggressive, rather than psychologically, looking to pin Neil into an awkward spot in the same way other players had early on in the season. Apparently the Terrapins had done their research on their opposition, the same way the Foxes had. It shouldn't have been a successful tactic, not anymore, but Neil started to slip into his old defensive way of playing, trying to avoid her. He was successful through the first 10 minutes of the second half, to the point where he started to regain confidence again. He felt like he'd barely touched the ball, as it passed from Kevin to Allison almost exclusively, but as soon as he felt able to connect passes, he called out to Kevin in French that he was there and waiting. It always happened the same way. At 20 minutes, Neil was finally actually playing like he should have been, and then a split second of inattention cost him. Ball in his net, he bolted up the outside of the court and at the last possible moment threw. He saw the goal light up red, felt the too close presence of his mark at his back, and realized he was out of space. Neil, too quick to stop in time and too slow to evade, hit the wall shoulder first and then was crushed an instant later as his mark hit his body and his racket at the same time. She pulled away, arms already up for the referee. She'd hit him within the allowed 2 seconds, and even Neil couldn't tell if it had been a deliberate move or not. He crumpled down onto the court in the aftermath, the breath driven out of him and every hurt reasserting itself at once. His racket spilled from his nerveless fingers. He should have been used to playing in pain. Apparently, he'd forgotten how to since leaving Evermore. That and everything else washed over him at once, an unstoppable wave of fear that tore through every failing coping mechanism he relied on. Neil looked up for his own teammates and was unable to make sense of who he was looking at when he couldn't decipher jersey numbers or even team colors. The court walls were going watery, the massive orange behind them blurring and blackening as he struggled for control. Everything was a weight on top of him, crushing him into the floor, and he was nothing, nothing, nothing. Chapter 36. Neil lay in his bed and listened to the same song over and over again, loud enough that he couldn't think. He couldn't afford to think. Thinking meant remembering the way he'd fallen to pieces across the court floor on Friday night, leaving his team to pick up after him. Thinking meant considering the aftermath, the fact that everyone in the world was saying his name and failure in the same breath. Thinking meant having to consider whether he was making all the wrong moves in a game he'd always been destined to lose. Thinking was him going around and around in circles inside his head until he was spinning on the spot. Not thinking meant being nothing. And right now, curled in on himself and feeling his heart beat dull and heavy in his chest, being nothing was preferable. He had a half-second warning there was another presence nearby before his duvet was wrenched off the bed, nearly pulling him with it. Disoriented, he ripped out his earbuds and looked straight into Andrew's expressionless face. "Get up," he said. He'd made it all the way into the room without alerting Neil. It must have been the feel of his weight on the ladder that had triggered his awareness. That should have felt more dangerous than it did. "I don't," Neil started. His voice came out rough and blank. His attempt at rendering himself thoughtless had worked well enough he couldn't even string a full sentence together. "You have an appointment with B," Andrew said. "I'm taking you." He seemed unbothered, perhaps a little irritated that he'd had to climb halfway into Neil's bunk to get his attention. Neil lay on his side and stared at him for a long moment, trying to summon the energy to get up. Andrew watched him back and then said, "You have 2 minutes." That was generous, coming from him. Neil hadn't seen him at all over the weekend, while he'd bounced between Abby's house and Wymack's apartment, never alone enough to get lost. He had been living with Allison's too casual normality, Renee's gentleness, Matt's goodwill, and Dan's easy acceptance, and all of it was harder to bear than Andrew Minyard's impassivity. Maybe that was because Andrew didn't give a shit about the Belmont game, about Exie in general, and potentially about Neil himself. 10 seconds, Andrew warned. Neil counted them down in his head, and thought that the process felt familiar. Like he'd been subconsciously doing the same thing every day for a while now. 0. Neil didn't move. He was paralyzed, his strength stolen from him by full-body fear. Andrew's hand reached out and curled around the back of Neil's knee, shockingly hot through the fabric of Neil's sweats. Then he started to drag him across the mattress towards the edge of the bunk. Neil's other foot snapped out and came to rest just below the hollow at the base of Andrew's throat, the weight of it pushing him backwards. He felt Andrew's one-handed grip on the edge of the bunk tighten hard enough his palm squeaked against the wood as his body tilted out into empty air. Neil said, quietly, "Let go." He'd earned the full force of Andrew's considerable focus with that, his eyes fixed on Neil's face. He said, "You don't think I'd drag you down with me?" "I'm not the one afraid of falling here," Neil replied. "Let go." Andrew's hand loosened and lifted away, but he didn't move. After a second, Neil withdrew his foot and sat up. The bolt of adrenaline at being touched had broken through something in him, leaving him shaking, but able to move again. "Self-pity doesn't become you," Andrew said, watching him inch across the mattress under his own power, without moving back. "Get down before I push you off," Neil replied, almost nose to nose with him. It came out flat and non-threatening, but he meant it. Andrew climbed back down immediately, probably more out of self-satisfaction than fear. He'd come here to galvanize Neil into action, and he'd achieved that. Neil didn't care much about looking put together for his brief appearance at Redden, but he needed a change of clothes that weren't stale with sweat and fear. He dug out a spare pair of jeans and a clean shirt, not bothered enough by Andrew's presence to make him leave the room. Andrew scrolled through his phone while Neil changed his pants, but he watched lazily as Neil stripped off his shirt. He was a mess of scars underneath it, a patchwork quilt that whispered of a hard life from the iron-shaped print on his shoulder to the tracery of thin white lines all over his back. Most of what he'd arrived at Palmetto with had faded to a few red and pink scars that overlaid older, paler ones. He considered telling Andrew to keep his eyes to himself, and then gave it up as a bad job. The physical marks were just the start, and it wasn't as though Andrew didn't know that. He pulled on the clean t-shirt, grabbed his shoes, and walked out of the bedroom. Andrew's footsteps followed him a moment later. Andrew had at some point picked up a rental car to hold him over until his insurance money came through, and Neil followed him to it in the parking lot. He waited until they were heading along Perimeter Road to say, "Did Wymack send you?" "Yes," Andrew replied. "Why?" "Presumably he thought you wouldn't show otherwise." "I meant, why did he send you?" Andrew shrugged. "You would have to ask him that." Neil dropped his head back against the rest, his curiosity already run dry. The rest of the short drive passed in silence. Andrew pulled into a spot near the main doors of Redden, and Neil climbed straight out. The sound of another door opening made him look back. Andrew was climbing out of the driver's seat and locking the car behind him. "Don't you have class?" Neil asked. "No," Andrew replied, joining Neil on the footpath. "You're going to be late." He followed Neil all the way up the internal stairs to Betsy's floor. She was waiting in the mouth of the hall leading to her office. She smiled at the sight of Neil and looked unsurprised by Andrew's presence. Neil looked back at him. "Are you inviting yourself in here as well?" Andrew held his gaze as he dropped himself into one of the chairs in the waiting area in a relaxed slump. Maybe he thought Neil was going to bolt out mid-session and make a break for it. Neil turned his eyes away and let Betsy lead him through into her office. She took her place, and Neil took his. She looked him over like she could pick what he was feeling just from his face. She probably could. He was done pretending he was inscrutable. "Tell me what happened on Friday night," Betsy asked.
"You were there."
Neil's voice came out sounding dead.
"You know what happened."
She had been the one Neil came back to on Friday night in a darkened corner of Abby's office, the smooth familiarity of her voice buoyant enough to bring him up again out of his own head. She'd left her seat in the stadium for him, just another person going out of their way because of him. He didn't deserve that care. "I don't know what you think and feel," Betsy said. "Tell me in your own words." He wasn't sure he still had any words. The Foxes had ended up losing to the Terrapins by 2 points, with Dan forced into playing striker while Neil attempted to get a hold of himself. A loss at this point in the season was difficult. A home loss was worse. It put the Foxes in the awkward position of needing a high differential win against SUA this week, and for UT to win their game against Belmont the same night, to send them through to the death match. The psychological effects on the team were unmistakable. They were already under immense pressure, without making this game a must-win. It was all on Neil. The Foxes were good enough to have won, easily so, and instead they were now thrust into a must-win game with a player who they once again couldn't trust to hold up. It was always him, screwing up over and over. He said the most straightforward truth he could think of.
"I had a panic attack."
Betsy didn't comment on that, but her silence was a prompt in itself. Her gaze through her glasses was calmly evaluating and as patient as the hills.
"It was just everything," Neil said, and then shrugged in frustration. "You know."
"I do," she said. "I understand that a video of you from your time with Edgar Allan's XE team was made public on Friday."
"You haven't seen it?"
"I would never presume to watch it without your permission," Betsy replied. "It's a violation of your privacy."
"It's just another thing that happened to me," Neil said, voice coming out clipped. "You can watch it if you want. I'm not interested in talking about it."
Betsy's head tilted. "You sound angry."
"I'm not. I'm nothing. But if I was, I'd have plenty of reasons to be."
"You have plenty of reasons to be angry," she acknowledged. "But you don't have to be angry at yourself, Neil." Neil shot her a look.
"I can do better than that. I have been better than that."
"Having a setback like this is very common, and nothing to be ashamed of. It's a normal part of the recovery process," Betsy said. "The stresses that you are under only add to the likelihood of that happening, especially considering the events of last week. You've made very good progress, but remember that it's only been a few months. It takes time."
"I don't have time," Neil said. "I need to be able to play this Friday, or our season will be over."
Thoughtlessness and the blinding oblivion of being nothing wasn't enough to shield him from that truth. He was running out of time and waiting for the second where everything finally caught up with him. He thought he could feel the ice cracking under his feet, but he wasn't sure that he wasn't already drowning. He said,
"I don't know what to do."
It hurt on the way out, more like prodding an infected wound than the clean pain of a fresh cut. Betsy, who wore her usual expression of calm acceptance, finally frowned at the sound of such obvious desperation in his voice. "I know that you were initially very skeptical of what I could do to help you. Do you think that what we've worked on so far together has been useless, or do you agree that you've benefited from our sessions?" she asked.
"I thought they were working," Neil replied. He should have learned not to trust himself by now.
"The way I see it is that the mechanisms I teach take practice," she said. "Let me put it this way. When you first learned to play XE, you would have done a lot of drills on ball handling skills, but the stress of your early games probably would have made you forget those skills in the heat of the moment. But the more practice you got, the more those skills became second nature. The skills you learn here are no different." Neil had learned most of those skills under the threat of death, too, so he supposed that she was right about it being the same.
So you want me to do more of the same?
That would be my professional suggestion, she replied evenly.
Do you really think that's going to work? Because I don't think the stress is going to go away anytime soon.
My concern is your health and success. I wouldn't suggest it if I didn't think it would work, she said.
Of course, there are also options involving prescribed
No.
The idea of taking anything, even something meant to help him, turned his stomach. The Evermore video had reminded him of the sickly sweet taste of a drugged drink more than ever.
That's fine, Betsy continued, unmoved by the sharpness of Neil's response.
You're in control here, Neil. I'm just here to guide you and make you aware of all of your options.
I didn't realize there were that many options, Neil said. The words tasted bitter on his tongue.
There are always options, she replied, raising an eyebrow. When Neil just stared back at her, she went on.
Neil, you're going to be fine. You just have to keep going.
He didn't have a choice. Maybe that was the frightening part, knowing that the alternative to moving forward on his current path was accepting that he was done for. Knowing that even moving forward might not save him. A shred of him wanted to stay in this tentative standstill anyway, like numbness could be the same as acceptance. That last wasn't a familiar feeling. He had always been the type to keep moving, to value keeping his life over any actual quality of it. Keep going. Betsy was right. And in the aftermath of Drake, she had made Neil an offer. He'd shrugged it off at the time, sure that she couldn't do anything for him, but he was no longer in any position to turn down assistance.
Betsy, Neil began, I think I might need your help with something.
By the time Neil made it out of Betsy's office, the waiting area was devoid of the bored blonde he'd left behind. Neil was pretty sure Andrew wouldn't have left him stranded there, so he headed straight down the stairs. As he walked, Neil pulled out his phone and powered it back on. It was a habit he'd taken up after getting tired of it constantly buzzing with texts during his sessions with Betsy. There was the usual collection of texts. The Foxes were so far doing a good job of pretending as though nothing had happened on Friday night. And one voice message. Frowning warily, Neil called his voicemail service. After the robotic voice told him the time of the missed call, 20 minutes ago, it went silent until a man's voice broke it.
Nathaniel, this is Special Agent Brown.
Neil hung up so fast he nearly broke the end call button on his phone. Clearly, the FBI were keeping tabs on him and the other Foxes if they'd gotten word about the ruckus on Thursday night. However, there was nothing Neil wanted to hear less right now than Browning's speculation on what Neil had gotten himself into. The Moriyamas were too close for the FBI to start sniffing around now. That was a line Neil definitely couldn't afford to cross. He saved the number, just in case, but deleted the message. That message and his discussion with Betsy prompted him to search a number he hadn't called since before Christmas. He came to a stop on the landing and leaned both elbows on the railing. From there, he could see through the narrow gap between staircases down to the concrete a few floors below him.
Long time no word, Phil Higgins said in place of a greeting.
You're the one who said you'd keep me in the loop. Maybe I got tired of waiting, Neil replied.
Is tired the right term? Impatient might be a better one, Higgins said. By the way, I thought you said you liked to deal with things before they became problems, because it looks like you might be having some serious ones.
I didn't realize I was making headlines in California, too.
There's this thing called Google Alerts. I don't know if you've heard of it. My life has been considerably more exciting since I set your name as one.
That's the nicest thing anyone has said to me all day, Neil said dryly.
You're right, though. I have been having a few issues. I'm wondering where you're at with yours.
Guess that means yours and mine are connected after all. I can't say I'm surprised, Higgins mused.
You were right, by the way. Your boy hasn't just been greasing the wheels in my neck of the woods. He's throwing money from New York to Seattle, and he isn't all that smart about covering his tracks.
Have you got a name?
Yeah, but I'm not stupid enough to say it in the middle of the department over an unsecured line.
I guess I'll just have to trust that you've got the right person, then. This was a waste of Neil's time if Higgins wasn't good enough at his job to prove that Rico was behind everything. Asking for my help and then maligning my abilities? That's cold, kid. Just in case you've forgotten, you did let me down once before, Neil said. And yes, I am cold. Remember? Higgins was quiet for a moment. I'd forgotten, but thanks for the timely reminder. His tone was rueful. Neil liked Higgins in some ways, but he still felt a bubble of anger in his gut at how Higgins had said he wanted to protect Andrew before failing so spectacularly. You're welcome. It won't be long before the information starts to go public. I won't be able to keep your name out of it. Or his. I never thought you would. Neil didn't care that he would be embroiled in still more controversy. This would be the truth, even if it got messy. He was more reluctant about Andrew's involvement, but he recognized that there was nothing he could do about that. Going by his reaction to the incident itself and ensuing media coverage, Andrew probably wouldn't care anyway. Give me a warning if you can. Don't call me, I'll call you, Higgins quipped, and hung up on Neil. Neil stared down at his phone until the screen went black without really seeing it. That was all the pieces in play, he supposed, from a department of corrupt cops to a court in West Virginia and ending with a scrap of paper he'd folded into Andrew's hand. He'd made Rico a promise. Dead or alive, he intended to keep it. At ground level, a fire door opened and then slammed. Movement below drew Neil's eye, and for the second time that day, he found himself looking straight down to meet Andrew's gaze. Clearly, Neil was taking too long, and Andrew had come back to collect him. Pocketing his phone, he turned away from the drop and clattered down the stairs to join him.